Hi, I'm Winston.
I'm Curtis.
And you are listening to the Critical Mass Podcast, back on the air again after a another hiatus. But you know what? It's going to be an exciting summer. Got things going on. Got lots of movies and stuff coming out that we're excited to see. We're going to be talking about those. And I think we're just going to lead right into the first one. The first one that I'm really excited about of the summer movies. Does this count as a summer movie?
Yeah, that's what they're saying. Or it was Spider-Man. They were advertising saying Spider-Man was the lead in one in last week, so I don't know.
Okay, all right.
Whatever Hollywood says goes.
You know what? I think we'll adopt my wife's criteria. It's not a summer movie unless it's playing at the drive-in. Ooh, okay. I wonder if Godzilla's playing at the drive-in. Oh, so Godzilla. The new Godzilla.
I think they said theaters only.
Could be.
Because it's going to be an IMAX also as well and all that crap.
Well, if they're putting it out on film, then our drive-in can get it.
True.
If it's digital only, then they won't have it. But Godzilla is the first big summer blockbuster that I'm really excited about. I love the big guy. I love the big monster genre, the whole kaiju genre.
Yes.
And let me just start out, Kurt. What do you know about this film going in?
Let's see. I've seen all the trailers I can possibly see.
All right. What are your first impressions?
Awesome.
And we're recording on the 5th, and the movie comes out on the 16th. So.
Right. So, let's see. The trailer starts out, a nuclear power plant gets screwed up.
Yeah, we see the meltdown. Yeah. The scientist gets separated from his wife.
Well, he has to close the barrier, or the whole place gets infected with radiation, that kind of thing. So she dies. And he realized, and the excuse is it was a natural disaster.
Right.
But, you know, that's when the trailer backs out and they see the city and all the prints. It's footprints, claw marks, tail drag. It's Godzilla. Turns out that the Japanese or French, when they were doing their nuclear weapons testings in the past, were actually trying to kill Godzilla. And all they did was manage to knock him out.
Oh, so this movie is coming in with a history of what has gone before.
The extended trailer.
I haven't seen that. And all then, I've seen is the the one with, I have a right to know!
There's an extended one. And then there's the Asian one I found. Trailer.
Yeah, tell me about that.
Okay, it goes around Watanabe, the Oriental guy.
Okay.
He's been investigating all this. Turns out they have a cocoon of a big kaiju.
Oh.
Yeah. It's Mothra. It's Budget Mothra.
Probably not. It's probably going to be Rodan.
No, it's got big butterfly wings flying at him at one point in the trailer.
Okay, all right.
And that big spiked leg that comes down.
Yeah,
that's Mothra's.
Okay, awesome. That's interesting. Mothra has been the good guy in the previous.
Well, Godzilla starts out being the bad guy, and then Mothra wakes up. They don't show, we don't see that in the American trailer at all. But at some point, Watanabe goes, oh, he's looking at the cocoon, and all of a sudden you hear the beast and see it fly, buzz it. Because it looks like Rodan buzzed the buildings, but then they show Mothra. So they may have three monsters, and we just don't know it. That'd be awesome. But it's Mothra, definitely, when it goes in at Godzilla.
Sweet.
So he goes, well, let the monsters fight. Because they can't stop
them. They can't stop them.
And that's the only way. So
sweet.
It's like the old movies.
All I've seen is the one weak trailer with the scientist and stuff. But it doesn't matter. It's Godzilla. I'm in.
And it looks way awesome.
It does look way awesome. Now, I didn't realize that this movie was acknowledging previous Godzilla films as part of its larger continuity. That's going to be awesome.
Yeah.
That's kind of what I wanted to do. I want to drop as many segments as we can possibly record before the movie hits. Because I want to talk about the Godzilla films that have come before. And I think the one that the most recent Godzilla film proper was Matthew Broderick's Godzilla, directed by Dean Devlin, right?
Yeah.
And you know what? For what it was,
it was okay.
It was okay. It was a giant monster movie, and I'm going to give it props for that. It was kind of an Americanization of the monster genre.
It made Godzilla
It brought him down into something
of a nuclear testing. Bad. Well, it's bad because look at the beginning of that damn movie.
Yeah, that's true. That's something that was always implied before, but no, it also made him a French problem.
That's beautiful. That was beautiful. French special
blame
forces.
The French.
Can't blame Canada this time.
And there were a lot of things that movie I think inarguably did wrong. And there's not really any need to beat that particular dead lizard.
No.
But there was a lot of stuff in there that I really, really liked, especially the atmospheric pieces. I mean, when you really got the opening in the film, the opening of the film, where Godzilla was terrorizing the fishing ship, and then they were tracking him on the island. I thought that was all just really smart and slick. And then when he gets to New York initially, and the big the big scenes through there. At some point, it kind of took a left turn into comedy land.
Because it went back to the persons too much. Matthew Broderick's character.
It could be.
Who was the expert, but no one would listen to.
It could be.
What the frack?
Yeah.
Oh, and then
he was accused of leaking, and then he didn't leak, and then he did, whatever. Anyway, we're not going to bash on that movie. It's got its own detractors.
Mm-hmm.
But it left us with a cartoon that I quite enjoyed, 40 episodes, available on Netflix. Loved them.
Yeah.
And the cartoon, much more so than the movie, gave us monster versus monster action, and that was freaking awesome.
And Godzilla 911.
Yeah, Godzilla 911. Well, the Godzilla in the cartoon was the son of
Godzilla.
Yeah, it was the one egg that, and it imprinted on Matthew Broderick's character, Papadopoulos. That's his name. But we had aliens, and we had monsters coming from other sources, and it was a monster fest, and it was great, fun stuff. Fun stuff. Didn't really ever take itself completely seriously.
It was a cartoon.
It was a cartoon, but it didn't devolve into the travesty that was Kong, King of Atlantis. So anyway, I enjoyed it. I liked to watch it when it was on. I liked watching it on Netflix again. And who knows? I may decide to celebrate the return of Godzilla to American shores by forcing my children to watch the most recent Godzilla cartoon. It's far more likely that I'll go back through my collection of classic Godzilla films and
re-released on DVD tomorrow.
Oh, dude, the only one I've got on DVD is Gojira the original.
Blu-rays.
That's what I'm hoping for. That's what I've been.
They are Blu-rays.
Oh,
and regular. So I'm getting them.
Remastered. I'm gonna have to check it out.
Check the details on Blu-ray.
I'll look for the details because the box set the box set that I picked up had the original Japanese and then the American versions, and I thought that in each case there were two different movies.
Oh yeah,
and I liked each one. But you know what? That's for future podcasts.
Yeah, they're released on DVD twin packs. Each one's got two of the movies on them.
Okay,
so.
Sweet.
Under $10.
So Godzilla, that's what we're excited about right now. That's what I'm excited about right now. And I think I'm probably going to have to sneak out to the theater Friday morning and hit that very first early show. Yeah, that's going to happen.
It could.
Other excitement coming up this summer includes Sharknado 2.
Yes, 3's been greenlit.
Oh, that's sweet. Beautiful thing. This is already. You know what? Even if they only ever give us Sharknado 2 and Godzilla, that makes it a good movie.
They're
monster
three,
monster
so.
Movie summer. Okay, good monster movie summer. Although I did just watch Bermuda Tentacles on Sci-Fi, and that was fun. That was fun. So
yeah.
The other thing involves the Fate system and Evil Hat. That's our other topic for today. And this is going to drop on the 5th or the 6th, depending on my endurance level. And I'm launching that Kickstarter project on this Friday, do or die. I've got finished artwork. I've got a video that I can live with. I just got to finish rewriting the script and the pages that are ready to go and launch that project up.
Cool.
But what that is... The quick version of that is the book is Opposing Forces. It is a tactical manual and bestiary of foes for Fate Core. Now, Fate first came to my attention when they did Spirit of the Century, mm-hmm. way back when they were doing it as a print and, or not print and play, print on demand. Mm-hmm. Print on demand back through Lulu. And I thought that was a very cool thing, and I sprung for the PDF at some point along the way and looked at a lot of it. Didn't really kind of read the whole thing. What were we heavily into at that time? Savage Worlds? No, it was before Savage. Because it was right around 2008. What were we playing? Were we doing something on a regular basis?
Uh-uh.
No, probably yeah. not.
Video games. Tony Hawk.
Tony Hawk. But that was cool. Well, no, we had various flavors of D20 games going at that time, because I was doing everything in D20. Then shortly after, we switched to Savage Worlds and did a bunch of miscellaneous stuff in Savage Worlds.
Yeah, minor stuff.
Yeah. But anyway, so the Fate Core books are really cool. It's a new universal system from the wonderful folks at Evil Hat. And as part of their project, they made that into a Creative Commons so that it is an even more permissive license than the open gaming license that was associated with D20.
Yep.
And it's just wonderful stuff. Fate has a lot of really cool stuff going for it. And I liked it in Spirit of the Century. And, I mean, it snagged you and Greg and everybody else with Dresden Files, didn't it?
Yes, Dresden. That was when I went for it.
Yeah.
Same with Greg. That was the main thing.
Yeah. Yeah, and the Dresden Files books are very, very cool. The RPGs and the novels.
Yep.
But I think it has really come into its own with Fate Core.
Oh, yeah.
And Fate Accelerated, because these are streamlined versions of the system that they gave us for Dresden, which was a streamlined version of the system that they gave us in Spirit of the Century, which, you know, itself was a streamlined version of the original. So it's had a kind of extended development cycle, and it does a lot of cool stuff. One of the things that I most appreciate about it are aspects. The fact that you can attach aspects to your characters, and they essentially replace stat blocks, defining what you can do and the kind of things that your character can be expected to do and know and things.
Yep.
What about you, Kurt? Is there something about the Fate system that has particularly caught your fancy?
The simplicity.
I don't know what do you mean by simplicity. I mean, because
the character
when I think simplicity, okay. I think Pathfinder.
No,
because
that's
you
not
roll Pathfinder's dead simple. You roll a single die, and you're trying to get a high number.
Okay.
And there you go.
It's the amount of work you have to put into the game. How about
okay.
that?
Okay. Okay. Go
Pathfinder,
ahead.
Pathfinder workloads up to here.
Well, yeah, you say simple and you think character creation. I say simple and I'm thinking dice rolling.
No, I'm also thinking game design. I mean, the system you got to work with for Pathfinder to create the encounters, design the adventure. But with Fate, it's just, here's the book. You read it? Okay, you look at it if you need to later. But it's, you go.
This is true. It's not very crunchy.
I'm falling in that loop with Pathfinder where, you know, so much information.
Information overload?
Yeah. And I just, yeah. And I tried to restrict it in the beginning and some,
yeah,
broke the rules.
You know, Fate just handles everything with that,
aspect.
Aspects and skills and stunts.
Yeah.
But none of it ever gets really, really complicated.
The hard part is thinking.
Well, character concept.
Well, your aspects, how to use your aspects. That's the hardest part because...
How to use your aspects.
Because that's the hardest part of it. You got to think. But if you're not into the set or you're tired, it's just hard as hell.
Well, that... You know what? One of the things that we're having trouble with is that the use of aspects is so completely counterintuitive to everything that we have ever learned in gaming.
And done.
And that was one of the things that really drove me to feel like there was a need for this book. I mean, because I've got page after page after page of notes that I've taken on this thing trying to figure out what the rules are trying to do and what we're trying to do with the rules. And, the use of aspects. I mean, we're used to Pathfinder.
We're used to Crunch. We're used to roll the dice. It's solved.
Tactical simulation, quantify and analyze and go.
I'm going to tap this aspect. Okay, how do you do that? I got to think.
In what way can I tap this aspect?
Well, that's the other thing. We got to be more descriptive. You got to think more. You got to remember what's going on, You gotta be proactive. Dare it?
Yeah, you have to be proactive.
And sometimes no one wants to be.
Well, at the end of the day, it is simpler to say, I swing my sword. I hit it with my mighty blade.
Yeah.
And fate just absolutely does not support that kind of gaming. You can do it. But you're not going to get a satisfying result. Do you? No. You agree?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it can have crunch because there's that diaspora sci-fi game.
Yeah.
There's crunch.
This is true.
But it's nice. It's somewhat simple. It's not overloading. It's still in one little book.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you can get it as much as you want or as little as you want.
And it's nice. It's smooth. It's simple, and it's very, very flexible. I mean, Greg can make his battle necromancer from Gosh, Land of Gosh, or what was the first one he did? The ecstatic priest of the old ones.
Yes,
and it fits in fluidly with David's
crazy man
tomb raiding. Oh, what did he make? He had tomb raiding archaeologist.
Yes, basically like
Indiana Jones style. Yeah, exactly. But the way the system is set up there, it's not a zero sum system, but it doesn't have to be.
Nope.
Even though the characters are mathematically balanced, the stories that you make during character creation are woven into it as well. And that's something that I haven't seen emphasized anywhere outside of White Wolf, is the story creation.
It's more like falls along the lines of the character template, like the guys at Fear the Boot talk about.
Yeah, yeah, the group template.
And why are you together? Get that. That way, then you create your characters. But they made it part of character creation.
They did. They did. And you know what? They weren't the first ones to do it. I just think they've done it the best. Because Artal Saurian did the same thing with Cyberpunk.
Yep.
And Twilight Imperium, maybe?
I think so.
No, Twilight 2000.
Ooh.
Yeah, but that whole timeline thing.
Well, yeah, but roll up your characters and stuff.
Yeah. There's so Cyberpunk, there. The early editions of Cyberpunk had a version of this, and it was very, very cool. But the way they do it in Fate Core and in Spirit of the Century and in Dresden and that is just really, really smart. It's really, really slick, and I really like the way they do it.
Yeah.
But they left some things out. Number one, they left out the... I don't know. I really want to call it the Power Gamer Conversion. Because they
you mean
kind
the
of,
help manual.
We need a help manual. There's this underlying assumption in the game that you are going to play the game the way they play the game.
No.
And
we're a
I
bunch
guess,
of power gamers.
But
that
we don't.
Work.
Yeah.
We're power gamers. We love dice.
We do love dice. We love doing big explosive things like that. And you know what? It's not just the big booms and the big fight scenes. I mean, Greg takes power gaming to a whole new level nowadays.
Oh, well, just think if Ryan was still here.
I know.
That'd be
the
worse.
The two of them together? Oy.
Somebody would have to die.
But, and Fate just, it seems to assume that you're going to be more moderate in your approach to things than that.
Yeah.
And it doesn't really tell you how the four actions and the aspects are supposed to be used when you have a group of people that is determined to lay waste to everything around them. And that's okay. We finally got our heads wrapped around it.
Oh, yeah. That wasn't too hard. It's just...
Yeah.
How does your aspect work for the situation? You're not going to be able to tap it all the time.
It's just one of those things. That's okay. I've got a whole bunch of pages and notes, and I did the math on it. And the math behind the system is so much scarier than any other, and that deserves a podcast all its own, so I'm not going to go into it today. But the math behind Fate is just really, really scary and complicated and complex. It is a thing of beauty in a way that no other game system is.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm the only one that thinks so, apparently.
Well, I didn't do the math. It's a game. If I'm going to analyze it, oh, hell
I know, that. That's you go to work for that.
Shit.
But the other thing that we didn't get in the core books and that I really thought I wanted and that I have been just... I need it. I need a bestiary. I need stat blocks and characters and foes
examples.
And stuff. Examples that are pre-done. Now, see, they do really good job of making example characters for the players.
Right.
But when it comes to mooks and thugs and big boss monsters...
Well, they do that in the examples to an extent, but it's not like with some of the others. You know, you look in the back, here's your bad guy gallery.
Yeah, there is no bad guy gallery. And I need a bad guy gallery, Kurt. I need one. I must have one.
It would help with understanding the aspects and everything more, too, what you can do.
This is true.
That would be the biggest benefit for a gallery of that stuff and that. Because that way you know how, this is how they use that for this. So, you mean I can do that?
That's right. Well, that's what I'm putting together. And on Friday, what's this Friday? 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Friday the 9th. Friday the 9th, God willing and the crick don't rise, that project goes live. I've got some finished artwork from two great artists. Matt Silber has been working with me on this, and Linus Larson. And I'm going to link to their particular websites in the show notes so you can check out their stuff. And if I'm very creative, I'll post a piece of art into the blog. That would be cool. Yeah. But I've got to put all these elements together and get this project launched. And this is kind of a double-edged thing, because Linus asked me, he's like, well, you know, what if you don't get the money for it, and, you know, or what if you get less money than you need, and all this other stuff. I'm like, look, this project's going forward. I've got all of these notes. I'm going to put this book together. At the very least, I can put it together and put it out on our drive-through RPG and be done.
Yep.
But I want it to look right. I want it to look pretty. So that's with some funding and some cool artists, because these guys are professionals. This is their job, and I want them to be able to do their job. So anyway, that's kind of my reasoning behind the project. And there's going to be whatever else I can think up going forward. I'm just going to jump on it and go. But this Friday is the watershed. Unleash the floodgates and let it go. Which also means, Kurt, that you're probably going to wind up on camera. You know that, right?
Whatever.
Destiny's already got a whole YouTube campaign planned out for us.
What?
She didn't mention this earlier?
No.
Oh, yeah. She and Isaiah have all the details worked out.
Oh, God. Oh, well.
Yep. So anyway, we're on again. We're on probably for the summer months. That seems to be the only time we can get this put together. Anyway, with any, I don't know. We'll do it for as long as the energy holds out, and that's why RSS feeds are automated.
Yep.
But you know what? I'm going to be on the microphone alone if I have to, at least through July. So there you go. In the meantime, thanks for dropping by the Reaction Chamber, listening to our little podcast. And if you care to join in the discussion, drop me a line. My email is mindspike@criticalpressmedia.com. And we'll get your thoughts. And if you've got anything to, especially anything to say on giant monsters, I want to hear it because that's my thing. I love them. Kurt, you got any closing comments for us?
Nah.
I think that sums it up, folks. Have a good night.
All right.